Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Tuesday, not Monday. Okay, September 6th. That's the day after Labor Day. It's Tuesday, and I'm Larry Jacobs, regardless if it's Monday or Tuesday. And welcome to today's edition of Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Our good friends from the Council for Exceptional Children are here. Lori Vanderplug, their assistant executive director, good friend of the show here, has put together a beautiful show with Peggy Yates and Ritu Chopra. Ritu is the executive director of the Paraprofessional Resource and Research Center at the University of Colorado in Denver. Thanks for getting up so early. All right. And then Peggy is an assistant professor at Alma College in Michigan and serves as the director of special education teacher prep there at Alma. And Lori, again, is associate executive director over at CEC, a wonderful organization. We'll bring them on in just a second. It's Tuesday, everybody. Okay. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. ace-ed.org. That's the home website for our American Consortium for Equity in Education, and everything we do is linked over there. All the things I'm going to say now, okay, we have teacher-retention.com. We want to keep great teachers teaching, okay? We cannot afford to lose any teachers. We cannot afford to lose any paraprofessionals. It's very hard to replace these people, getting harder and harder and harder. Okay, and lowering the standards, I might add, to bring people in there does not help. They're just going to quit in a couple of years. It's like trying to fill a really leaky bucket. Okay, we got to fix the bucket, not just keep filling the water. Okay, we're going to talk about that. We have SELtoday.org. Okay, social emotional learning. Our Excellence in Equity Awards program is still going on. There's an awards icon over at ace-ed.org. Our online journal, the back-to-school issue of Equity and Access, Pre-K-12. Check that out. Just click on the cover. Okay, and that's where we put our podcasts, like we do with this one. So everything's at ace-ed.org. Okay, I'm bringing everybody on, including heading out to Colorado for Ritu here from Maine. I'll start with Lori while Ritu continues to wake up. Good morning, Lori. It's Larry here.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you for having us here with you today, and you set the stage very well for us. CEC has been talking with you all year long about the educator shortage issue.
Oh, yeah.
But today I want to talk about the importance of the paraeducators. You know, they're essential personnel in all education, but specifically in special ed. A little bit of data, Larry. Back in 2020, there were more special education paraeducators. We had about 514,000. And then special ed teachers, about 425,000. So more paraeducators across the nation than teachers. But, you know, we all know that the COVID hit us and hit us hard with shortages. Many of our paraeducators were laid off. Their hours were reduced. Their benefits were reduced. And they became part of that great resignation of 2021 and 2022. There's been some recent articles with both Illinois and Indiana recently highlighting the impact of the not only the educator shortage on our special education programs, but the lack of paraeducators. Just want to highlight a couple things CEC is doing, but I really want you to have an opportunity to hear from Ritu and Peggy, who have been doing a lot of work around this issue for many, many years. But CEC actually created a paraeducator membership category, Larry. We wanted to provide quality opportunities for them to have some professional learning as well as networking so that we could, you know, kind of effectively attract, prepare, and retain them into the special education. We've got multiple webinar series, not only for teachers and administrators, but I want to highlight one that's brand new. It's a free webinar series for all paraeducators across the nation on the high leverage practices. And you've had conversations around the high leverage practices on your talk podcast. But this is a free webinar that every paraeducator should have access to. And then Ritu was very instrumental in getting our paraeducator competencies updated. Well, that can be found on our exceptionalchildren.org website. But I know that Peggy and Ritu have a lot of information to share with you today and the audience. around how we can effectively support paraeducators so we can attract, prepare, and retain them in the field of special education. So our infants, toddlers, children, and youth with disabilities across the nation get adequate support. So yeah, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Start the conversation.
Thank you, pal. I appreciate that, Lori. Lori, it's great to have you here. And my nephew was over here on the Labor Days in elementary school principal, and I asked him how he was staffing up this year, and he said he's fully staffed at the very last minute, okay, with teachers. And he said it's paraprofessionals that are the real challenge for him, okay, and they can't find enough. And it's astounding that I'm doing this show today, the day after Labor Day. Okay, it's amazing. Good morning, Ritu. Thanks for getting up so early. I'm in Maine. You're in Denver. I really appreciate that. Thank you, Ritu Chopra.
Larry, I'm actually in India right now, so it's evening for me there. So I've been up for some hours.
Did you say you're in India now? Really?
Yes, I'm visiting family in India right now. So I'm 9.5 hours ahead of you all.
Yeah, I have a big smile on my face now that I heard that. That's great. And I hope. Where are you in India? India's a big place.
New Delhi. Yeah, in New Delhi.
There you go. The big city, big town. Yes. Okay, that's terrific. And I hope you're having a great time. Since we're on the subject, how's the weather in New Delhi today?
Oh my God, hot and sticky, smoking hot and sticky.
Wow. Right. That's great. I think you might be the furthest away guest. No, I had one in the southwest tip of Australia. He's probably further, okay? But it's great to have you here, and thank you for calling in from so far. Peggy in Michigan, I guess you can't top that, can you?
I cannot, but I'm in beautiful central Michigan right here in the middle. Glad to be here, Larry.
And Peggy, I'll be nice and ask, so how's the weather in central Michigan today?
Well, it's a little overcast, but we had a nice weekend, so we can't complain here. You know,
That's beautiful. Michigan
with all of our lakes.
There, ladies and gentlemen, visit Michigan, and please stay at Peggy's house. Is that okay, Peggy?
For sure.
Okay, good. And by the way, here in Maine, I'll just give you our update. It's been raining for the last, it started around midnight on Labor Day and has been midnight on Sunday, and it's been raining ever since. It still is pretty well. Okay, in southwestern Maine where I live. Okay, so we're a little soaked. The wells are filled and everything's good. Ritu, I want to talk to you about this paraeducator thing. And this is really big. And actually, since you're there and you probably know a little bit, you compare what's going on here with what's going on in a big democracy like India. Okay, talk about, and I want to say this. You work at the University of Colorado, Denver. And it's the Paraprofessional Resource and Research Center for Collaborative Education Leadership. Ritu is the executive director. Again, Paraprofessional Resource and Research Center for Collaborative Education Leadership at the University of Colorado, Denver. All right, she's in New Delhi today. Okay, and talk about the paraeducator situation right now, Ritu, just from your point of view and what's happening over the last year or so.
Sure. So I think Peggy set the stage, and you also talked about it. Paraprofessionals are extremely essential for what we do in special education. Special education really is, programs will not be successful or effective if we did not have paraprofessionals. They are the ones who are providing a lot of support to teachers as well as to students with disabilities in terms of instructional supports, behavior supports, community connections. You know, paraprofessionals are more similar to students culturally and linguistically, so they bring those amazing community connections and funds of knowledge around the community, the cultural knowledge, and they really are, with their presence, students are able to, teachers are able to help students achieve their goals, as well as, overall instructional effectiveness is possible because paraprofessionals are in classrooms supporting students. And, another set of eyes, another set of, set of ears. And so they provide these extremely, extremely important services. And they are also, when we talk about inclusive practices, they are the bridges to inclusion. Because, you know, a special education teacher may have a caseload of 20, 30, 40 students, and we are talking about inclusion. The special education teachers cannot be at, you know, 20 different places. Or that's where paraprofessionals come in. They are the ones who make the instruction happen on behalf of the teacher, and they go into the classrooms and provide the instruction designed by the teacher. So regardless, I mean, their role is extremely important. And what is happening lately is there have been issues with paraprofessional utilization and employment all along, but the last 2 years with COVID and lockdown and after that when things opened up, we've seen a huge drop in the numbers of paraprofessionals in schools, paraprofessionals giving up their jobs and going to places where they can make more money and they have less stress. So I think the current situation is really we need paraprofessionals. We don't have enough of them. We need to work on their job conditions are not in terms of really mainly pay and schedules and training and supervision. There are a lot of issues around that, and we need to do everything that's possible to make sure that paraprofessionals, we are able to recruit them, we are able to keep them, and we are able to support them so that they are successful in what they do.
Thank you, Ritu. That was a great overview. And you know, we call them paraprofessionals, but they're really professional paraprofessionals, if I may. And you, I hate to say it, but you can't really run. I'll say it this way: you can't really run a special education classroom without them, okay? Because the kids have so many special needs, if I may. You said a teacher can't be everywhere with the special challenges that they face, okay? More and more kids with IEPs, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm good, and it's frightening. I got to tell you that we're losing these people. Okay, and where to replace them? And I want to ask Peggy this. Peggy, you're director of special education teacher prep at Alma College, but I'm curious, and maybe if you don't know this, Peggy, you probably do. You can swing it back to Ritu. Okay, but Peggy, who are these paraprofessionals? We call them paraprofessionals. How do you become a paraprofessional? I mean, what, is there training, or is it just somebody off the street who wants to do it?
Well, that is part of the problem, is that we are looking for pretty much warm bodies that we can train. And as a member of a school board here in Alma Public Schools, I know that we pay approximately just under $13 to these people who are coming, and they are wanting to work with kids in the school setting. But who are they? They are people with high school diplomas. They are moms. They are people who are retired. They are good people who want to change the lives of students with special needs. But without them, you are right, it's really hard to run a special education classroom without them. In fact, if they are assigned a one-on-one paraeducator in their IEP, so in their individual plan, we are working against the law if they don't have that assistance in their day. So it becomes a really complicated issue.
Continue. I don't know how to ask the question. Okay, they really are professionals, and we need them. And $13 an hour isn't a lot of money these days. Okay, Peggy, how do you even prepare a special ed teacher to handle a class of 25 kids with all these different needs without a whole group of paraprofessionals in there?
Fortunately, the law helps us to not have 25 kids in the classroom at the same time. So we're hoping that we are looking at 10, maybe 6, maybe sometimes with a waiver, 17 here in this area. And so we have a lower number, and that helps with that individualized instruction. And then when we have a paraeducator come in, well, we hope that the teacher is prepared to let them work underneath their license and provide that ongoing training that is necessary. Now, I want you to imagine, Larry, this is me 25 years ago, because I taught for 25 years before I went into higher education.
You were 6 years old at the time. Go ahead.
I was six, right? And here comes a grandma-aged I don't want to have ageism. Let's say 50-year-old, which is what I am now, comes to my door, and they are assigned to me, and I don't know it. And they're like, I'm a paraeducator, and I'm assigned to so-and-so, and my job is to make sure that they are making it through their day. And imagine, I don't know what to do because I have not experienced supervision of paraeducators or really just having another adult in the classroom. And I really am just dumbfounded and have to figure it out. Well, Larry, that's one of the reasons why I went into this area is because teachers must know how to supervise paraeducators, and they must know the components that must be in place so that the paraeducators are prepared to become instructional aides. Now, I can take this a little bit even further.
Please
that
do.
Our administrators then have to be able to provide the time for these people to work together and training programs. And this was what was missing altogether in my experience as a K-12 teacher in working with paraeducators. I needed an administrator to say, hey, here's a week, and we are going to provide this training, and we're going to have you come to it together so that you're both on the same page and that you understand how to create this instructional team. Larry, it is possible because teaching is a learned skill. It is possible that with the right training, the right ongoing coaching and mentoring, that a paraeducator, even though they're only being paid possibly, let's say $25 an hour in a real world.
Okay.
In the best case scenario. But, you know, we're looking at closer to 14.
Okay.
But if they feel like they're a part of that instructional team, it is possible that they want to stay, that the rate of attrition will be reduced, that they will feel important on that instructional team, and that they are increasing their teaching skills to become that valued member of that child's school day.
I agree. But all those things you said, Peggy, and I agree with you 100%, this is what's needed. And I want to go back to Ritu on this. Okay, Ritu, you're the executive director of a group for collaborative education leadership. And all of those things that Peggy said, Professor Peggy over at Alma College, it's what she said, no one could disagree with. But the problem is the amount of people we have and the time we have. And how are we doing with those things that Peggy talked about? The need for time, for training indeed, just finding the professionals to do this. Ritu, what's the word on the collaboration involved with all of this? How are we doing on that?
Yeah, I've been part of the Sarah Professional Research and Resource Center for the last 28 years, and it's quite a little frustrating that we have been talking about some of the ideas that we have been talking about around training, supervision of paraeducators by the teachers, preparing teachers to be more effective supervisors of paraprofessionals,
wow,
better pay for paraprofessionals, more respect for them, recognition of them as team members. These, honestly, nothing has changed. Sometimes one feels that nothing has changed because these things just don't happen. The lack of resources, or sometimes it's just lack of information among district leadership, school leadership. So we keep talking about the same issues, and that's why, I mean, we are very excited, Peggy, and I am very excited that, you know, CEC has taken lead now in at least creating some standard-based training for paraprofessionals. So when we talk about training cannot be just any training. Paraeducators don't need the same training as the teachers. Their role is different. The teacher is the lead, and they assist the teacher. So there has to be specialized, specific training, and that is aligned with the competencies that CEC has created. We have worked on, Peggy and I both worked on the work group that create those competencies. The training has to be standard based. It's important what kind of training paraprofessionals get. It's also important what kind of training teachers get to be able to guide the work and oversee the work of the paraprofessionals. What policies are needed around better working conditions for paraprofessionals? And, one thing I just wanted to throw in here, I like the use of term para-educators more than para-professionals. As you know, as we all know, para is a Greek word, and it means somebody paramedic, paralegal, somebody who works alongside a life center, a more qualified professional. Very important personnel, but we need to have that distinction so that we can elevate and we can highlight the teacher's role in supporting those paraprofessionals. So everything Peggy has said, I think she has the classroom experience, and she can probably, and now she's prepared teacher, she can probably tell you that what she hears from her teacher candidates, the teachers who are in her program, the issues that they share are exactly those issues that Peggy experienced when she started out. Somehow we are, the change has been very slow in terms of enhancement of supports and enhancements of resources to support paraprofessionals, and we need to do a better job at that. Districts need to do a better job at that.
And by the way, I love your term para. I like para educator better than para professionals too. I really do. Okay, it's a great term. Peggy, talk about all this, and you know, you are in charge of you're the director of special ed teacher prep over at Alma College in Michigan. All right, are you putting the kids from year one as para professionals into the schools nearby so that they can help and really get experience and get paid? Can they do that? Peggy.
Well, we just do some internships that way, but wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if that was a part of the clinical experience that they were expected to do? They absolutely should, but they also have to do six other clinical experiences to get them ready to be general education and special education teachers. So here in Michigan, we have dual certifications, so they become both. And so in their 4 to 4.5 years in the program, we're trying to pack all of this in to make sure that they are really prepared. And so what I have done, Larry, is I have made sure that I have embedded the experience of supervising paraeducators so that the pre-service teachers understand what the law is and how to begin to think about supervising someone that might be older than them, may have more classroom experience than them. And then on top of that, how do you evaluate a paraeducator so that you can give them the feedback mm-hmm. for continuous improvement?
Good point.
And so I've embedded those pieces into teacher education, and I'm a huge proponent to make sure that those I'm presenting across the nation to be able to train other professors on how to also incorporate those pieces. So the standards of teacher preparation also need to include understanding how to supervise paraeducators. And that is not the case in all states. So here in Michigan, that was added. I was on the committee about 5 years ago. That's a part of the standard for preparing special education teachers. So those are my mm-hmm. thoughts on that. But
yeah.
I think the second part of your question was about the first part was about pre-service education, but what can in-service teachers be doing as well? And I already mentioned this, but it comes back to what the administrative sets up for those teachers. So first, if a paraeducator understands that the teacher may know nothing about supervising paraeducators, that is the reality. Like, that was my reality. If there hasn't been a part of their teacher education program that addressed that, they may be coming in not knowing that. Now, in student teaching with special education, it would be unlikely that they haven't experienced a clinical part of that, but being in charge of supervising paraeducators is a really big deal. So let me talk about the work that Ritu and I have just completed, and Lori has been so instrumental in making sure that we are allowed to do this work. So the series that the CEC just published with us as the co-curators, and then I am actually the instructor of that course, is called High Leverage Practices for Paraeducators. And in that series, as we started to plan it, my story started to unfold to say, well, the reason that I'm doing this work is because I didn't know how to do this work. And so I'm actually on screen, and it's been an awful lot of fun to be on screen and do the script of telling the story, Larry, that I'm telling you, that I did not know what to do, and this is how I stumbled, and this is what should be done better. And so we go through and tell the story and then move into the high leverage practices of what should be done prior to the year starting, during the school year, and ongoing training for the paraeducator. Now, the series is free in the Learning Library, and I can't imagine that school shouldn't start their year off by addressing that series, having the paraeducators make accounts. Heck, let the paraeducators join the CEC. Lori, I think that we have a reduced rate for that, where they could begin to access the Learning Library. But let me say, the series is free. They can make an account, they can log in, and they can actually see, well, I guess it's my face, and you press play, and I tell the story and walk them through this series.
Another thing that I want to share, again, a shout-out to Laurie, and we also did some webinars for Council for Exceptional Children, which are available, and Laurie can provide more information, which are all around, training up administrators as well as teachers around how to utilize paraprofessionals effectively. You know, all these years of being immersed in this field, what we have learned is, you know, we can train our paraprofessionals as much as we want, but if they are not getting the support that they need from their administrators and the teachers they work with, they cannot apply their skills. They have to, ongoing supports are extremely important. So we have created a couple of webinars around those for teachers to be teachers and administrators also to be aware of what skills they need to be effective in their role as personnel who guide and support paraprofessionals. So I think it goes hand in hand. Training of paras is extremely important. And Peggy and I and even Nora, we can't highlight enough how important it is for the teachers and administrators to create conditions which are favorable for the growth and development of the paraprofessionals and for them to be effective in their role as paraprofessionals.
There's something else that we haven't talked about this, all right? With any good with any job, you have to have a road for promotion. You have to have a road to get better pay, all right? Move up the ladder, so to speak, all right?
Yes.
The one thing I haven't heard is anybody talking, again, you were saying how to utilize paraprofessionals. There's a terrible shortage of special ed teachers. Yet a paraprofessional who's been in a classroom, let's just say, for 3 or 4 years, that's pretty darn good experience, assuming they're good people, and let's assume they're fairly intelligent, okay? Is anybody talking about creating a road to full certification and a road to being a special ed certified teacher by becoming a paraprofessional and working your way through and then taking a few courses? Okay, because, you know, we need special ed teachers. We got to think a little bit outside the box here, all right? And we've got a group, and I know the numbers have dwindled, okay, but there's still thousands of them out there, and we got to give them a road upwards, okay, which makes people want to stay in your job. A lot of people left. And I'll ask Ritu that or Peggy. I'll ask Ritu, and you can swing it to Peggy if you want. Ritu, what's happening with that? It's a great school of promising teachers.
Absolutely. It's been long actually recognized that paraprofessionals are an excellent pool for future teachers for several reasons. You know, one of them is that they already are immersed in classrooms. They're already there, and they know what it takes to work with students with challenging behaviors, students with other kinds of needs. They already know this. And another very important reason why paraprofessionals are excellent candidates for future teachers is because their experience is in the content area where we experience the most shortages. You know, special education, bilingual education are just to name the most important ones.
That's
and
right.
Another reason, very important, they are really good candidates are they have roots in the community. As I said, you know, paraprofessionals often are linguistically and culturally more similar to students, and they are more likely to live in the community around the school than teachers do. So So they had these amazing, knowledge of community. They belong to the community, and they will be the kind of teach, if they become teachers, if we provide them the necessary supports and opportunities to become teachers, they're more likely to stay in the community. So, you know, we are it's like tackling teacher shortage and teacher retention at the same time. But, and I have run several, I've already run about seven paraprofessional to teacher pathway programs. They were all grant funded, and there's a lot of work happening all over the country around it. But there are some challenges with that kind of work. Paraprofessionals, as important as they are, as great candidates as they are for becoming teachers, they face a lot of barriers. You know, there's financial barriers. Many of them cannot give up their jobs. They are non-traditional students, and English may not be their first language. And so there are academic barriers, linguistic barriers, social barriers. Many of them they don't fit in traditional programs because they are older, and they have been out of, some of them never went to school. They have, as Peggy said, high school degree, and after that, high school diploma, and they started to work as a paraprofessional. So they have no prior college experience. Many of them, paraeducators that have gone through my program, we found that they were told when they were in high school they were not college materials because whether they were, language issues or there were other issues. So they have all these barriers they need to overcome. So we need to, the programs that we run for paraprofessionals, we provide a package of services for them. You know, it's mm-hmm. like really wraparound services. We have, financial support, whether it's giving them scholarships or helping them access scholarships, social and emotional support, really having cohort groups, having opportunities for them to really, where they develop connections with other students, colleagues. Giving them, helping them how to manage a full-time job as a paraeducator and then go to school at the same time. So there are so many supports that they need to be successful. Academic supports also, they have the self-doubt, the fear of failing. It could be, their previous college experience, if any, was not very pleasant.
That's right.
So we have to help them overcome all those things and program, taking their experience, years of experience into account, and maybe making sure that they don't have to, the internship time is student teaching practice time, that is reduced for them. So we are really taking, they don't have to do extra work, but we are compensating for some of the work that has already been done. And most importantly, we need really strong partnerships between school districts and teacher preparation programs. You can't just have a paraprofessional go through a traditional teacher preparation program without all these supports that I just talked about.
That's right.
Teacher preparation programs need to provide those wraparound services to paraeducators. And school districts, they have a responsibility too in terms of a flexible schedule for paraprofessionals so that
That's
they
right.
can attend classes. Providing them site-based mentors, providing them all the, giving them opportunities to apply the skills that they are learning in their teacher preparation programs. Sometimes we find there's a total disconnect between what the paraprofessionals are learning in the classes and when it comes to working in their schools, there is no connection between what they're learning and what they need to do. So I think it's a running paraprofessional to teacher pathways is challenging, but at the end of the day, I think it benefits everybody. It benefits the school districts. It benefits the paraprofessionals. It benefits the communities because they have teachers that they can relate to. Paraprofessionals are actually the best sources of diversifying our teachers.
That's right.
Because, issue nationally, we need more diverse teachers. And so when you have these folks right there with experience in schools, with all this wealth of knowledge, and they are culturally and linguistically more similar to the students, they are the best candidates to go through these kind of programs and become teachers and address not only teacher shortages, but teacher retention.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about a traditional route to become a teacher. These are non-traditional times. And in these times, there's a lot of talk for kids, for students, to K-12, competency-based education. We give them credits for competency they show, okay? Not everybody's great in math, but they might be a great carpenter, okay? Well, I mean, I think they're great in math, but they're a great carpenter or electrician. They get credits because they're competent. Okay, and we got to we got to think outside the box with teacher education, and we don't want a bunch of idiots coming into being teachers. But if people show that they are competent in this, we have to do everything we can to make it work. It's so obvious. And Peg, we only got a few minutes left, and thank you, Ritu, for that overview. But Peg, I got to ask you, the other component that was been missing from the conversation a little bit is community colleges. Are they helping out with creating good paraprofessionals, or is that an overlooked part of it? Do they have anything to do with this? Community colleges, Peggy. And there are good ones.
Ritu would be the expert on training programs. But in our area, to my immediate knowledge, like here in Central Michigan, we do not have any training programs that exist through community college.
Okay, let me just make a point. That's pretty stupid. We should really work on that and get that better. Okay, because community college offer a lot for this. And again, these are non-traditional times. Ritu, you wanted to say something. We got about a minute left, so go ahead. You got 1 minute.
Community colleges, professional training programs, you know, many years ago when NCLB came out in 2001, they started those programs. But, you know, their paraprofessional training specifically is not required in most states, and that's a huge, you know, issue that we need to address, that there is not specific requirement. As you said, it can be a warm body in a first and high school diploma. So those programs didn't work. But in my state, in my work, we have community colleges are very, very important partner for us in our career ladder, paraprofessional to teacher career ladders. Community colleges are the best place for non-traditional students to start, and paraprofessionals are non-traditional students. So our programs have amazing partnerships where they do 2 years of college at the community college. They get the associate degree, and then we have transfer agreements in place which help them do the last 2 years at our university. So I think that's, again, important partnership between among higher education partners along with school district partners is really, really important and highly recommended for successful paraprofessional to teacher pathways. And we have one program where we are, it's called the Partnership for Rural Education, where the paraprofessionals or our students do first 2 years of college in a rural community college, and then through online programs or our faculty going there or recruiting local instructors, the last 2 years they do our university program, but it's a very, very strategic partnership. So, yes, community college their colleges have a huge role when it comes to paraprofessional to teacher pathways, as well as even pre-service training. They could be very, very effective partners in that too. But somehow it's, again, because para training is not required by most states. There are not policies around it. So those programs are unable to recruit paraprofessionals for pre-service programs. And many of them, as I said, they came about in 2001, 2002, around NCLB. And then they have, over the years, they have fizzled out. But at the same time, they should be probably revived.
I apologize for the dog barking. My wife just walked in the house here. The dog's barking. I apologize, everybody. Ritu, thank you for all this, okay? And we got, and I'm going to go back to what Ritu said as we wind down here. School districts and the state departments of education have to really make stuff happen here, okay?
Yes.
And it's that simple. Then the universities chip in and we make it work, okay? Ladies, we all got to go. Peggy, Ritu, thank you. Ritu, have a great trip home whenever you're coming back.
Thanks,
Larry.
Okay, with the family. And Peggy, you're wonderful. Thank you for being here. Lori, you still there? Lori?
Yes, I am still here.
Thank you for getting the group together.
Yes, it's a great group. They're doing great work.
So are you.
CEC is very lucky to have them with us.
Yeah, we're all lucky to have CEC.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, ladies. You guys all take care of yourselves wherever you are. Be safe and have a great school year. We'll talk again soon. Thank you all.
Thanks, Larry.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, ladies.
Bye.
And safe trip home, Ritu, from New Delhi, okay, to Denver. Okay. Anyway, thank you, ladies. That was great. That's CEC, it's exceptionalchildren.org. And I'm telling you, this is a real challenge out there. And we got to be smart about it. Okay. We got to be smart about it. Okay. How important these paraprofessionals are. Paraeducators, I like that better. We'll archive at ace-ed.org where everything we do just happens to be. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.